everyone. I'm Corina Pereira. Welcome to our SGRKF Knowledge Series. The session of Knowledge Series is organized every month, irrespective of the pandemic and lockdown. The sessions of Knowledge Series will continue to encourage, motivate, and enhance the energy of the audience of Knowledge Series. Knowledge Series is a point of origin for the Central India's first multilingual literature festival, that is Orange City Literature Festival, OCLF Nagpur. OCLF is now entering into the fourth edition this November 2022 after the success of past three editions of it. Knowledge City session is now a part of Orange City Literature Festival. Today we have invited Mr. Pradeep Chakravarti for the session on Leadership, Shastra and Lessons from Maratha Leader Chhatrapati Shivaji Maharaj. Mr. Pradeep Chakravarti was educated in the school KFI, Madras Christian College, Jawaharlal Nehru University, where he started international relations, and the London School of Economics, where he studied human resource development. He is currently pursuing a PhD on the administration of the Pandya Kingdom. Pradeep began his career by working in the family business, the TVS Group. He later worked at Cognizant, Infosys, and McKinsey. In all these organizations, he worked in HR and learning and development with clients to improve performance through behavior change. For the past few years, he has specialized in conducting workshops and one-to-one coaching sessions and heritage tours that seek to impart leadership and life lessons from Indian history and philosophy. Leadership Shastra, in his ninth book. His earlier books include ones on Tanjavur, Kodaikanal, the temples of Tamil Nadu, and Ashok Leyland. His work on a children's history of South India and a translation work are currently in press. We welcome you, sir. We also have a moderator, Mr. Dipankar Mukherjee. Dipankar Mukherjee is the publisher and director of Readmania Publishing, an independent publishing house based in Delhi. Under his leadership, the house has produced over 120 books in just 6 years, with some critically acclaimed and award-winning titles as well. He teaches creative writing at many institutes and runs the popular Young Author Program. He's an engineer from Nagpur University, holds an MBA degree from IIT Madras, and has been in the corporate world for 9 years. Before becoming an entrepreneur, he also manages business interests in hospitality and manufacturing. Welcome, sir, to our SGR Knowledge Series Foundation. I request Dipankar, sir, to kindly take over the session.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Corina. It was wonderful to have the introductions, and it's a pleasure to be here again. Pradeep, it's going to be nice talking to you. I'm looking forward to a great session. And without any further delay, let's jump into the first question. Why should one study history through nonfiction when they've already studied history through history books?
That's an important question, Dipankar. I have been working on making history work in corporate companies through consulting assignments, which included training workshops, coaching sessions. And I found people, everybody that I've spoken to has studied history in school, but I find two associations with history. One is a bunch of people who hated it, found it very irrelevant. I mean, why should I know when somebody died, when somebody was born, how long they ruled for, what battles they fought? Doesn't really matter in my really life, day-to-day life. So you have one group of people, history is extremely irrelevant. The second group of people who loved the history subject because of the stories that they learned in school. So it seemed to be more they loved the storytelling aspect of the teacher rather than history itself. But I found that you can look at history as a way to change behavior in organizations or at work because of the fundamentally unchanging nature of human beings. Now let's take Shivaji the Great. Though I've looked at about 14 different leaders in the book, every day Shivaji woke up in the morning. I don't think he woke up saying that I'm going to be a leader in the future 200 years, 300 years later, that I'm going to leave a legacy like that. he woke up with a lot of needs, a lot of fears that are pretty much the same that we have today. Not very different from the needs and fears that his ancestors had, not very different from the needs and fears that his descendants have. So if we start looking at history from this human nature point of view, of what are the needs that they had? What were the fears that they had? How did they act on those needs and fears in the short term and in the long term? Suddenly history becomes very, very relevant for us to improve our performance at work. So for this reason, every nonfiction book that you read about history, if you can, of course, if people like the dates and the numbers, let them look at it. If they don't want to, let them not look at it. But if they can focus on the needs and fears of human beings in the nonfiction book of history, becomes very relevant for us in our own lives.
That's very interesting, Pradeep, that you say it in this particular way. When you put it this way, it almost sounds as if there is a proper structure and scientific approach to analyzing history for the benefit that you mentioned. So is that true? Can there be a structured approach?
True. So that's what the book really looks at. It looks at a structured approach. So I wouldn't say scientific or non-scientific because, you know, it's a bit of a debate on what science is and how you compare it to humanities. But I would say the book is about making history work for your performance at work. And it looks at 14, 15 different people. What were their needs? What were their fears? How did they deal with that? What legacy did they leave when they were alive and after they died? What can we learn for us ourselves from that, using applicable examples from my own consulting experience? So I would highly recommend, I mean, history is free. We've already read it. It's there all over the place. If you don't want to read it, history comes to you through WhatsApp University. So why not make it work for your performance?
That's a very interesting way to look at it. And we'll come to some of the points that you mentioned here later on. But I'm going to jump now into Shivaji Maharaj. My first question towards that end is, what do you think makes him one of the tallest leaders of our historical past?
Right. So the seal on the book over here is actually the seal that Shivaji Maharaj used. And I thought it was an appropriate one to start off because he's really one of our well-loved characters. So when you look at Shivaji's greatness, it comes from, I mean, we're going to have a statue of him. We have buildings named after him in Maharashtra and pretty much the rest of India. He's seen as a big hero. And when you see his life, his ability of entrepreneurial spirit, his never say die attitude, overcoming different adversities, bringing a team together, motivating them, staying, putting them in place together, administration, networking, and setting up a personal example, quick thinking, all of these are traits that Shivaji has that make him worthwhile for us to look at. What made things work for him? How can I learn to find that little bit of Shivaji within me?
That's a very, so much of information and so much of qualities that you've put in from that gentleman makes me think there must be something that must have gone into him as a child. So are there elements that you have observed or noticed that were probably imbibed into a young Shivaji, which made him who he was? And from that, can we draw some lessons of what could be taught to our kids to make them tall leaders?
I think you raise a good point. The development of children and their leadership qualities in children is really critical. We come from a country which has probably the world's earliest leadership for children development book, which is nothing but the Hitopadesha. The Hitopadesha was written for princes to be great kings. So we've had that tradition in our culture. We know that Shivaji's mother, Jijabai, instilled in him many, many qualities of faith, humanity, equality, empathy, and spirituality through her teaching of the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. And I very much suspect that Jijabai would not have taught these just the stories, but have had conversations with her son about how he would apply these in his own life. And he also came from a milieu where his grandfather, Maloji, was the military general for one of the rulers of Ahmednagar, Malik Ambar, the de facto ruler of Ahmednagar. Malik Ambar was an Ethiopian slave who came all the way to India and made it big. So clearly in Maloji himself, was very well adept in the warrior techniques of Mallikamba. So Shivaji would have had a lot of spiritual upbringing through his mother Jijabai, and also a lot of practical upbringing in terms of war and statecraft through his father and grandfather as well. Incidentally, his father and uncle, Shaji and Sharifji, were named after a Sufi saint called Shah Sharif. So this whole, you know, Shivaji's character of just being Hindu versus Muslim is a lot more complex when you read the deeper history of Shivaji. But we'll come to that a little later. But suffice it to say that much of how Shivaji became who he was very, very dependent on the early influences that he had, which is why by the time he's 15, he's already thinking and conceptualizing this concept of Swaraj. So he must have, the upbringing of bringing Dharma and the values must have happened on very, very early in his life.
That's interesting because he's done multiple unique things in his life. So, you know, a solid upbringing or a solid foundation must have done something great to him. As a matter of fact, his most famous tactic of war, guerrilla warfare, is so famous that it's become synonymous with Shivaji. So what else, apart from guerrilla tactics, did he do unique in his lifetime?
So even by the time he's 14 or 15, we talked about the region of Sahyadris and the Satpura and the Vindhya, right? A very, very mountainous region. Even today, it's difficult to travel in that region. But by the time he's in his 20s, he's well traveled in that region. He knows people there and he's able to build a personal connection with people. And this stands him in good stead at a later point of time when it comes to his networking skills and his spy network. So he really knows his people very, very well. The second thing that he did well was he was always open to innovation and creative practices, whether it was in terms of bringing the best weapons to his army or thinking way ahead. Of investing in the navy. Some of his forts were on the sea coast, but most of his enemies were actually within land. But yet he thought of the importance of investing in a navy, so never failed to innovate and look at what could make his army stronger. The third thing that he did was connected with the guerrilla warfare, was his ability to keep his army very light and quick to move. So mostly light cavalry, they knew the lay of the land very well, which meant that they could easily outwit the Mughal army and circle the Mughal army and fight with them rather than engage in head-on battle. And finally, Shivaji knew when to push and when to quit. There are times when he accepted the power of Aurangzeb and he lay low and he lay quiet for about 4 or 5 years after his escape. There were times that he had to bribe and get his way out. He was a survivor. At the end of the day, he was really a survivor.
Yes, I think that sums it up really well, that he was a survivor. As a matter of fact, you know, even his fame is so so widespread that even in Bengal, we have grown up with a lullaby, which actually mentions the Maratha warfare and Maratha army. And, you know, I think his movement or his ability to spread his troops have been far reaching, much more than what we can think of in geographical spread.
Absolutely. In fact, even when he was alive or a little later, the other great guerrilla warfare expert in India was Lachit Borphukan, who was the Borphukan or the general for the Ahom dynasty in Assam.
Yes.
And there are British who talk about how the pain that they were getting from the Marathas was very similar to the pain that they were getting from the Ahom dynasty as well. So clearly, I don't know whether they met each other and spoke to each other, but the techniques were common knowledge across Western India on one side and Eastern India on the other side.
Truly, probably, they were, I mean, what I remember of reading is that Maratha warriors were very well, very, very prized warriors. So they were a part of many, many armies. So probably it went through those warriors who went there. So coming to my next question here, see, every aspect of his life is worthy of a case study, you know, almost corporate case study, like a ground intelligence collection or the organizational skills, timing of his moves, etc., etc. Is it true that he was unique and only his examples could be given in today's life? Or were the other leaders around him who were equally tall, but he kind of overshadowed everybody else?
I think it was a bit of both. We love to remember success stories. We love to remember, interpret people who rose above what they had to do to what they wanted to do. And Shivaji was really a survivor. I mean, if you look at the way he escaped from prison, he lay low for a couple of years and then he starts the skirmishes again. So he was somebody who's a survivor, and we love to hear the stories of survivors. And remember, the stories of Shivaji have survived largely through oral tradition of ballads and songs and music and so on. There were certainly important other people at that time. One person that Shivaji mentions a lot is somebody who lived a little bit for him, which is Malik Ambar. Malik Ambar was a slave from Ethiopia. He was a hunter there, which is where I think he perfected his art of guerrilla warfare. He moved from there to Persia or Arabia and was there bought as a slave and moved on to Maharashtra. And he was bought by another slave, who an African who had become a slave and then who had got his freedom. And finally, when that man died, he gave Malik Ambar freedom as well. And Shivaji mentions him as a Dharmatma, as a great man, because clearly Malik Ambar taught a lot of good things to Maloji, his military general, and Maloji was Shivaji's grandfather. So there were definitely a lot of other big leaders at that time. Lachit Borphukan is another person that we're talking about. But they all seem to show an ability to understand the geography very well, their ability to manage the strategy according to geography. So I would say, if you're marketing a product, you would do it one way in Uttar Pradesh, you would do it in a very different way in Andamans and Nicobar Islands, you do it in a still very, very different way in Kerala, you do it very differently in rural India, you do it very differently in small town India or in urban India. I think that's the lesson, one more lesson that we need to learn from Shivaji.
Interesting. But as we all know, human beings are not black and white, they're always gray. So there must have been certain elements, failures, moments of Shivaji's life which were not so great. So, do you remember anything, other lessons from those that we can learn?
Yeah, we don't know much about this, but I would surmise that one thing Shivaji could not do was a lot of his ability to hold on to a territory was focused on the forts that he captured. Now, this was in a way set up with some failure because the forts are in areas that are largely in rain shadow areas. It's a very dry landscape. I mean, of course, in the monsoon, it's lovely with the water, but otherwise it's relatively dry, even today, if you look at that region. So though he had a brilliant connection with the local people, he was not able to consolidate his territory and look at the cultivation techniques, improve the cultivation techniques, because he was constantly fighting. So if there's one thing that he didn't have much time to do, was to really consolidate the empire as well as he could have done. Though, compared to Malik Ambar, he at least left a very clear succession plan in place. So he thought of that. But in the consolidation, because of the territory, because of the constant warfare, he couldn't do as much as he could have done.
Yes. And you mentioned a very important point of succession plan. I also believe that he left a very strong legacy of organization and a management structure for the kingdom. So which really worked on for the Marathas for many, many years after that as well.
Yeah.
So if you look at Shivaji as a whole, if you had to point out five characteristic traits that have been universal and very, very important for calling him out as a leader, what will those five traits be?
Okay, I'm an ex-McKinsey consultant, so I think in terms of three. I'm not going to give you five because I think three are easier to remember. Number one, he knew when to fight, he knew when to keep quiet. If you look at the way he dealt with Aurangzeb, Malik Ambar also had the same problem with Jahangir. But Malik Ambar had a lot more things going in his favor than Shivaji did. And Jahangir was a lot less military powerful than Aurangzeb was. So Shivaji knew when to keep his mouth shut and bide his time and when to make things worse. I think that's number one. Number two was he was very, very open to change of innovation, technology, the way he worked with his people, the way he did his strategy, guerrilla warfare, all of that. So he never had one strategy and said, whether I die or not, this is the only one that I'm going to do. He was very, very flexible. And I think post-COVID world, that's very important for us. Number three, was his ability to build a personal connection with the people who worked for him. I think his army, his people, the farmers, the traders, they were all personally loyal to Shivaji, and he was clearly able to build that. I think he must have been a phenomenal, powerful personality to elicit that personal, the personal charisma, and he certainly did that very well. So I would say these are the three important leadership qualities of Shivaji.
I think that's brilliantly put. And now that you've mentioned an ex-McKinsey consultant, I'm going to put you in a spot and ask you another question around the same thing. Which current business leader do you think can be equated on these three characteristic traits with Shivaji Maharaj?
Okay. That's not a question that will put me on the spot, because it's an easy answer. Leaders can achieve lasting legacy, and they can achieve legacy in their own times only if they have all these qualities of Shivaji. So I think it's really a question of leaders who found that Shivaji within themselves. They will really raise to the top and fulfill their full potential. Those of us who can't find that Shivaji within ourselves, I'm sure we'll do some good, because all of us will live into some form of good for the others, but we could do a lot more and leave a lot more impact. So my submission would be, Shivaji is dead and gone, right? We don't need to look at whether he was a great guy or a bad guy. There's no point. But what we need to look at is what made him successful. What made him seen as a hero today, that it's practically difficult to find stuff that he didn't do so well. It's very difficult to find with Shivaji, right? So clearly he must have done some things really well. How can we do that in our own circle of influence around us? I think is a more profitable question to ask, because remember, at the end of the day, leadership Shastra is all about how do you use historical personalities like Shivaji to improve your performance at work.
Brilliant. I think that's a very, very pertinent end to this part of the discussion, where you say find the Shivaji within you as a mantra for every corporate leader. But before I end the conversation with you, I'd like to know from you that apart from Shivaji, all the people that you mentioned in your book, is there anybody else that you think mentions or has created legacy as big as Shivaji?
I've mentioned some of them in the book. Lachit Borphukan in the Battle of Saraigat, the Ahom dynasty, I've talked about. Malik Ambar, I've talked about. I've talked about the successors of Aurangzeb and the last Nizam of Hyderabad in a very different context. And out of the women, Ahilyabai Holkar and Jahanara, Jahangir's, Aurangzeb's sister, who would have known Shivaji, of course, also in shows some of Shivaji's traits in a very different way. And remember, as women at that time, they would have had a very difficult time, but they were still able to live into some parts of their full potential, as well as Shivaji did. But that's another conversation for another day.
That's wonderful. I think, I wanted to end the conversation here, but your answer drove me to another question. Is there any data or is there any inference that you could draw from the social influence of Shivaji's rule and time? While we know he was a great conqueror and he expanded the boundaries of Maratha Empire, but what were the social indices doing during his time?
I am not sure whether we have too much of that, because remember, a lot of what we have of Shivaji is really from oral tradition of ballads.
Yeah.
So the fact that he left a fully equipped state treasury, that he was able to hold on to his kingdom, he didn't have a lot of civil wars, obviously means that his people were happy to the best of their abilities.
Great. I think that's a very well laid out conclusion that we can, leave the conversation at. And I'd request everyone to pick up the book and read through, not for anything else, but to find the leader within you through these historical characters that Pradeep has brought to life for us. Thank you so much, Pradeep. It was lovely talking to you. And if you could just for 1 minute show us the book on screen, and before we end that for you is the book, Leadership Shastra. Thank you so much, Pradeep. It was lovely talking to you.
Sorry.
Oh, that's upside down.
Okay, it was okay the first
time. Great. Over to you, Karina.
Thank you so much, sir, for really sharing your insightful knowledge. I would like to express my gratitude to Mr. Pradeep Chakravarti and Dipankar Mukherjee for their informative discussion, for sharing their vast knowledge and expertise, and for giving their time to the SGR Knowledge Foundation Knowledge Series. I would like to thank Mr. Sunil Raisoni, Chairman of Raisoni Group of Institutions for providing this opportunity, as well as Western Publication for the support of this session. Thank you to everybody for attending this session. The session will be there on our OCNF Nagpur YouTube channel and SGRKF Facebook page. We will be coming up with more sessions. Till then, stay tuned with us and please do subscribe to our SGRKF Facebook page and OCLF YouTube channel. Thank you so much, sir, once again. Thank you so much, Pradeep, sir. Thank you so much, Dipankar, sir. It was really a great session.
Thank you, Korena.
Thank you.